What's up, everybody? Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I am Will Pruitt, and I'm here to walk you down the wonderful and beautiful road that is TNA Impact Wrestling for September 27th, 2012. I'm just going to launch into the show here. I like this episode. I thought that for the first time, TNA on this episode made it feel like Bound for Glory was coming up. In recent weeks, we've gotten a lot of, well, at Bound for Glory, and it's felt like this eventual thing. And this episode kicked right off with Hulk Hogan saying, we are 3 weeks away from Bound for Glory, and making that feel special. And if there's one thing that TNA needed to do at this point, it was make Bound for Glory feel a little more special, feel like the biggest show of the year. And they managed to accomplish that on this show. That's kind of, you know, when you talk about the, you know, the big bad of things, a little bit, that is like the big overarching good of this show was I felt like Bound for Glory was coming up. And I felt like that meant that something special was going to happen soon. Now, that's not to say that everything on this show was good, because it wasn't. It's not to say that everything was bad either. The show to me was more good than bad. The show was a good episode of Impact. Let's launch into it from the beginning, because there's a lot of stories that they told here and a lot of things. Again, this show pointed towards Bound for Glory a lot. It was, you know, it was that show that said, hey, almost every segment said Bound for Glory is in 3 weeks and it's a big deal. So the show opened with the Previously on Impact segment that was better than they have been recently. That's a compliment I want to give TNA right now. The Previously on Impact segment wasn't too long. It didn't include superfluous footage. It wasn't like, oh yeah, look, there's ODB and Eric Young, and oh man, check it out, every Aces and Eights attack ever, and man, Austin Aries eating chicken. That dude loves chicken. Like, it wasn't that. It was focused on, you know, Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries had a confrontation. You know, Aces and Eights, this happened with them last week, and it did a good job of doing what I believe it's meant to do, and that is foreshadowing the actual, you know, the show that it will follow, or that will follow it. Then we saw Hulk Hogan come out with Sting's baseball bat again. Also, if you want to follow along with me, head on over to ProWrestling.net. Ryan Kester's TNA Impact Live coverage is kind of what I use as an outline as I go through the show to keep things in chronological order. So that's a thing. And Hogan mentioned, you know, right off the bat, Aces and Eights, we've got a date tonight, but I've got to handle business first. And he said that Devon's contract fell through, so tonight on Championship Thursday, they would crown a new TV champion. I'm sad to see Devon leave, in a way, not because I liked him as TV champion, but because he left with the title? Like, what was TNA doing that they couldn't have had Devon drop the title before leaving? So we found out on this show that we'd get kind of the Hulk Hogan eliminations segments for the vacant X Division title. Then he started talking about James Storm versus Bobby Roode and said it's gotten out of hand. They're going to have a street fight at Bound for Glory, and that the referee for that street fight is going to be King Mo. Or not the referee, the special enforcer. And TNA loves special enforcers, man. Like, they are really into it. If you think back to when Kurt Angle first came into the company, his first pay-per-view appearance for TNA was as a special enforcer for a Bound for Glory main event. TNA is all about special enforcing things, which isn't a bad thing. It's not my favorite thing, to be totally honest with you. I don't love special enforcers in general. I think that the gimmick is a little meh, but it's also not a terrible thing, and it's a nice way to get King Mo involved. James Storm, later in the night, cut a really good promo backstage about the special enforcer position and King Mo having it, and he made King Mo sound awesome. Like, James Storm's promo made me want to see King Mo special enforce this match, so there's that. I like the idea of King Mo doing it. They use special enforcers too much in TNA, but King Mo's not a bad choice. Hogan then talked about Aces and Eights and who they've attacked and all that, and said he's going to their clubhouse, and he, even if he has to go alone, he'll do it. At that moment, Sting's music hit. and Singh returned to the Impact Zone. And this was kind of odd because I don't feel like it's been that long since I've seen Singh. Like, Singh coming out, I was like, oh, hey, it's Singh. I don't think he was on the show last week. But it's not like Singh got beat up and left for dead, and this is his major return. Like, he had that run as general manager, and then Hogan came back, and he was just like, I'll see you later. And that was the weird thing to me, is that Singh never really left. You know, Singh, it was never, like, this big thing where Singh took off as a, you know, as an authority figure or as a wrestler. It was just, hey, see ya. That's it. So Singh coming back didn't really pack a punch, and Mike Tenay and Taz were like, Oh, it's Sting. He's finally back. And I, you know, you sit there and you go, finally? I mean, yeah, it's always cool to see Sting, but I don't know that I say like finally or anything. Then we got another Bound for Glory moment, and it was Mr. Anderson talking about main eventing Bound for Glory on 10-10-10. And every time I see that, I just think, man, what a mess of a main event that was. With Jeff Hardy turning heel, and Hulk Hogan turning heel, and Eric Bischoff turning heel, and they arriving. And I worry that we're going to get that again with Aces and Eights. That's one of my big concerns with this, is that every other year, TNA likes to create a large heel stable that dominates stories for the next year. And I really believe that Aces and Eights is going to get a big member, and that's what it's going to be, is the stable that dominates stories for the next year, and it's going to dissolve right around or right before Bound for Glory, and it's then going to be another year of setting up the next big stable. That's the pattern that TNA booking has been in, and I know I've talked about that pattern a lot, in, especially the members' audios. I don't know so much on the All Access side, but look at it. 2009 or 2008, the Main Event Mafia formed off the heels of that Bound for Glory. 2010, you had Immortal form off the heels of that Bound for Glory, and now I think 2012 we're going to see Aces and Eights form off the heels of Bound for Glory. You know, and by form, I know they already exist, but by form I mean in a much larger way. We went to our first match of the night, Kurt Angle with AJ Styles versus Chavo Guerrero with Hernandez versus Christopher Daniels with Kazarian. And this match did the impossible. It made me want to see the triple threat main event, the triple threat tag team championship match at Bound for Glory. You know, if you listen to Ryan Kester and I last week on the member side of things, you heard me say, I'm not excited about this. I don't think things can get me excited about it. I don't like the idea of these three teams. I'd rather see it be 2-on-2. And, you know, I reiterated that in the .NET countdown yesterday with Jake Barnett. Man, I liked this. And I liked the way they involved the partners and the way things came to a head. I, you know, it was basic. It was, hey, these three teams want to fight, and we'll get to see them fight eventually. But man, basic worked really well here. So kudos to TNA for doing that, not overcomplicating things. And Christopher Daniels ended up rolling up Chavo while Chavo argued with Kurt Angle for a surprise when Daniels looked just positively delighted in himself for winning, which was great. I liked the match. It, you know, Hernandez, and I talked about this, and I'm coming around to Hernandez and Chavo as a tag team for this reason. Chavo can work. And, you know, you get Chavo and you take away the Three Amigos, and I think I actually enjoy the act about seven times more. Hernandez is a guy that, when presented well, can be really entertaining. And can do some amazing stuff for a dude his size. He's just, he's not the total package in the ring, and that's hard to deal with sometimes. But I definitely think that this is the right place for him, and this is the right time for him to be in that place. So, that was fun. Then we saw kind of the first round of eliminations, and this, for Championship Thursday, and this was one of the better elimination rounds that we've seen. And it was Hulk Hogan backstage talking to Samoa Joe, Magnus, Garrett Bischoff, and Mr. Anderson. Now, this I'm not without my my criticisms of this segment. For one, Mr. Anderson was just too big for this environment. He was playing the Mr. Anderson character and not just being Ken Anderson. And when you have, you know, when you're in that environment with the cameras that close and everything, and you're going, well, I just want to fight, and I would like a fight. You sound kind of ridiculous. Like, you know, Samoa Joe and Magnus are just talking to each other, and yeah, things are getting a little heated, and they're upset. But in the end, they're just talking to each other while Mr. Anderson is yelling about being an asshole. And that didn't work for me. That was a disappointing part of this. Another thing that didn't work for me, Garrett Bischoff, I don't mean to be too critical of him, and I think that all of us kind of do that sometimes, but Garrett Bischoff was just like, well, you know, there was this thing where, well, you were D-Von's tag team partner, so you deserve the TV title shot? What? And, you know, Hogan basically said, Garrett, D-Von saw something in you, and I want to see it too. It was kind of strange. I will be fine with Garrett Bischoff not being in segments like this anymore. But the interaction between Samoa Joe and Magnus was great, as they talked about tag teams, and they talked about teaming together and being the best, and it was just a really natural verbal confrontation between those two guys, and it made me think, why haven't we seen this? Like, we've seen them confront each other sometimes, we've seen them kind of go at it, but we have not gotten the big verbal confrontation between them that I think is going to be pretty necessary soon. It's going to be a, I would like to see them together. I want to see them in the ring. I want to see what those two guys can do. And it's been it's been too long since their tag team broke up that I've been waiting for that. But hopefully, I mean, I'm going to assume that that's what we get from those two at Bound for Glory is a match for the television championship. For those that didn't watch the show, Samoa Joe ended up winning the TV title. Sorry for the spoiler if you listen to this as a director's commentary, but come on, that'd be silly. I don't direct this. Tara was on the phone with her new boyfriend, who I still hope and pray is not Hollywood Dave Hebner, and just talking to him, like, make dinner plans with Sheila. And Brooke Hogan showed up and said, you've got a match next. You know, she ignored Brooke Hogan to talk on the phone. It was, you know, Tara kind of just being a heel. I don't know that I buy Tara as, like, the boy crazy, I'm a frilly little girl heel as much as I buy her as the vicious heel. So it's weird to see her in the boy crazy, I'm a frilly girl heel role. But in the end, I like Tara in the ring better as a heel than I do as a babyface. So although, you know, we're getting one thing backstage and almost getting another in front of the, in front of the cameras in the ring, it works. This was another, a quick production thing. This was another thing where it seemed like TNA crammed a lot into backstage segments that went boom, 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 back and forth, which, TNA classically, they used to have, it was like a quarter hour of their show that you could count on being four backstage segments in a row, like, opening segment reaction promo, Hulk Hogan's office promo, random match later in the show promo, and a random confrontation between two guys promo. Like, it was just, you could count on it, like clockwork, that you were going to get a lot of backstage in a row. And TNA's scaled that back a bit, so it was strange to see them do a couple in a row. Preview of Gut Check Judging was shown, I'll get to that. Oh, I don't want to skip the match here. Tara's opponent ended up being ODB, who was with Eric Young, and this was a number one contenders match for the Bound for Glory shot at the TNA Knockouts Championship. I feel like ODB was in this role just to get her and Eric Young on the show, because they're entertaining. We saw Taryn Terrell referee this match, and Eric Young did, in fact, lock up with Taryn Terrell, for those of you wondering. ODB kind of beat on Tara for a bit, but Tara tweaked her knee, or pretended to tweak her knee. She wasn't able to make it to her feet, and ODB got rolled up by Tara. I don't know if that's a planned finish. I think it was, and that the fake her knee thing is just, Tara's heelish way of copping out. Good stuff. ODB is entertaining in small doses like this, and, is a fun character. I enjoy her and Eric Young's stuff together, so that was cool. Bruce Pritchard was then shown backstage with Al Snow, berating him for challenging Joey Ryan and getting him involved. And he talked about it like challenging a civilian. And he asked Al Snow, are you an executive or are you a wrestler? You need to start acting like an executive in this company. I don't like Bruce Pritchard. Like, on TV, I just don't like the role that he's playing. And I think we're seeing Bruce Pritchard's role increase pretty regularly, which is not necessarily a good thing. I don't think we need to see more Bruce Pritchard. I think less is more and none is ideal with him. But, you know, we saw Bruce, so Bruce had to do some acting, and maybe I don't like him because of his shirts. I'll be real with you. Bruce Pritchard's wardrobe is terrible. He wears, you know, those shirts that you see people wear, and I see them in stores, but I've never seen anyone actually buy them, but I have seen people wear them, where the cuffs, you can roll them up, and there's, like, a different design on the cuff than on the shirt, and it's like, I'm wearing a striped shirt with paisley cuffs. You don't need paisley cuffs, dude. That's not necessary. Paisley cuffs. I mean, if I'm wearing a striped shirt, I want striped cuffs, and when I roll up my sleeves, I want the stripe pattern to continue as best it can. I don't need paisley poking out beneath my striped shirt. That's not something that I desire, and Bruce Pritchard wears that. The only thing more annoying is those dress shirts where the collar is a different color than the shirt. Like, the blue shirt with the white collar, I will never understand that. Maybe so you can replace the collar on a shirt, but my God, get your stuff dry cleaned. When the collar starts doing that, throw it out. Like, that's the solution to that problem, gentlemen. Let's all remember that. This has been ProWrestling.net Fashion Corner. We now return you to your regularly scheduled Impact Report. All right. But Taz came in, and it was time to talk about gut check competitor Evan Markakopoulos. I honestly cannot say his name. Evan Markakopoulos? Markakopoulos? I got nothing. This basically centered around them going, he was good, and he showed some fire, and he definitely had focus and intensity. He definitely had some charisma. Yeah, but he's young. He's really young. He's young. And to be honest, the gut check segments this week didn't bother me. Partially because they ended up with them saying no. And because they ended up with the judges saying no, it seemed more realistic. Like, they said no for a legitimate reason. They said no. The only thing that now bothers me about the gut check in general is the fact that TNA does not have anyone going, yeah, but they lost a squash match in 2 minutes. They showed us nothing in the ring. Why would we hire this guy? Like, that's what I want them to say. It's just, yeah, but he was awful. Like, not he was a bad wrestler, but yeah, but the performance that he put on, I mean, he lost to Doug Williams in 2 minutes. Why would we hire him? Like, if Al Snow were to just walk back and say that, these would make total sense. But they are... I'll say this with the gut check. It seems like they're kind of getting their footing beneath them again, where it's not everyone gets in because Alex Silva got in. It's, all right, let's build it up. You know, Sam Shaw was the last guy to get in. Sam Shaw was the last guy to get in. But, you know, last month's What's-His-Face, poor guy with 17 children and a sob story didn't get in. This gut check guy didn't get in. And hopefully it becomes a string of no's. I could deal with 6 months of no to build up to the guy that shows a lot of fire and looks really good in the ring and has a lot of intensity and, you know, that has the intangibles that they feel is ready to go right onto the main roster. You vote yes with him, and then you start giving him matches on the main roster. I feel like that's the way you do this. But, you know, then we saw a backstage segment with Bully Ray, and, they had announced that tonight it was going to be Bully Ray with a partner of his choosing against Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries. And the big hook was Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries are going to fight at Bound for Glory, but they have to coexist tonight. Pretty classic storytelling, especially when you have a babyface versus babyface main event you're building to. You put those babyfaces in a tag match together against some major heels. And they ended up doing that. But they asked Bully Ray who his partner would be, and he kind of just blew him off and said, you know, film me walking away, film my calves. And they filmed his calves, and they were magnificent. Then we saw Hogan talking with Garrett Bischoff, Mr. Anderson, and Samoa Joe in the hallway, and this one wasn't as good as the Office segment, but it wasn't bad, and he basically said, Garrett, you're not ready, it's not your time. Anderson versus Joe, you're going to fight, you know, that's going to happen for the TV title. Which is fun, you know. Then Bobby Roode went into Austin Aries' locker room and said, this was a really nice segment, by the way. This might have been one of my favorite things on this show. And said, you know, hey, I'm, you know, Bully Ray's partner tonight. And he talked about how, you know, in his title reign, he beat Jeff Hardy. How easy it was for him to beat Jeff Hardy. And then he turned and looked at Austin Aries and went, but I never beat you. That was cool. That was a really cool moment. then, you know, Rude just kind of compared Aries to Hardy and basically said, Aries, you're better than Hardy. Just to, and it was a way of planting the seeds for, I'm guessing, the Aries character shift that we're going to get. That I would love if Aries wasn't like a fresh baby face. Like, Aries started being a baby face around, what, May or June? And now he's, you know, it looks like they're turning him heel-ish again. And honestly, I'd like it a lot more if we weren't seeing a build almost just like it for CM Punk on Raw every week. And I don't like comparing WWE and TNA stories that much. I think a lot of times it's coincidence, but... And I didn't read anything into the Austin Aries title win as being, hey, let's capitalize on this whole our former ROH guy thing WWE's doing really well with. No, I didn't think of it like that, but man. I don't know. I'm beginning to suspect that this Austin Aries shift is a part of, hey, WWE's turning CM Punk heel, and creatively, that's been a major success thus far. So, why don't we try it with Austin Aries? And even, you know, even if that's not the full intention that's being stated in writers' meetings, I think there needs to be enough of an awareness of the other product that you don't do that same story the way that they are. Then we got our third match of the night, top of the second hour now. Samoa Joe versus Mr. Anderson for the TNA Television Championship. This was a pretty good match between the two, but the ending kind of bothered me. And it was Samoa Joe, he locked in a rear naked choke on Anderson. And it was about 3 minutes in the chokehold that Anderson spent. It was, you know, it was a lot of rolling and a lot of Joe shifting to keep the hold on. And the idea, I think, was to, you know, reinforce the whole Samoan submission machine thing. And, man, Joe will choke a guy out, and you're not going to get him to the ropes because he's going to keep you from getting to the ropes. But I really didn't like Anderson. I don't know. He was in the hold for too long. You know, you do that with half the time, and you have Anderson maybe a little more frantic in the choke before he passes out, and I'm fine with it. But I felt like I was watching that for a little bit longer than I should have been. An interesting note here was they did not have the little red toy belt. The television championship was not presented to Samoa Joe. It looked like the TNA World Championship was, but Joe and the referee were sure to not show the belt to the camera. You know, you just saw the back of it, which was black, not red. But Joe gave it a kiss and, you know, looked at it and walked out and made... You know, you could tell he was making an effort not to turn that belt towards the camera. You know, hey, maybe D-Von hasn't sent the belt back yet. Maybe there's something weird where he's not going to. Maybe there was a deposit on it and he's going to show up on WWE TV and throw the belt in the trash. Seriously, how funny would that be? Just like, dude, that's just the TNA TV title. It's not even a big deal. Booker T's like, oh, that's my Legends Championship. He just takes it and starts walking around with it again. It's just like, I'm the Legends Champion! Sure you are, Booker. Sure you are. Remember, Booker T invented that belt for himself. I would be okay with that, actually. D-Von, go to WWE. Let Booker have his Legends Championship back. It was unjustly taken from him. Booker wants his Legends title back. Can we talk about the concept for the Legends Championship real quick? I know you're saying to your computer right now, no, Will, no, you can't get to talking about the show. But what was the concept of the Legends title? Like, was it, well, you have to have won at least 3 world championships in your career to qualify to be the Legends champion. Those world championships had to be won in major companies. I mean, it was worse than the global title, which also made no sense. Like, we've got a world title and a global title. That's how cool we are. You know, it would be like if they made a champion of the universe title. Like, the Universal Championship. Oh, then I don't need the world title. I can be the champion of most planets. Also, little known fact, PWI would recognize at least a solar system champion if you defended the title on the moon. But you gotta get to the moon to defend the belt. If you cannot get to the moon, you can't be champion of the solar system. Just kind of the way it is. You can win the match by countout, but you do have to bring the guys from PWI along. So you probably wouldn't want to. Just kidding. PWI. That magazine still exists, which blows my mind every time I go to Walmart. I don't go to Walmart that often either. So maybe that's why it blows my mind every time I go there. There's enough space in there where I'm sure that they've gone out of business in the time between my last trip normally, and they haven't. Then we saw a red-tinted video of Hulk Hogan and Aces and Eights, which was weird. It was just them. Hogan was backstage talking to Sting, like, "Yeah, brother, I borrowed your baseball bat. Hope you don't mind, brother." "Oh, Hulkster, the singer says you can keep his baseball bat, Hulkster. Thanks, brother. I like it. It matches my new painted-on facial hair, brother." Brother, indeed. But a crew member showed up and had Hogan sign some documents for Bruce Pritchard. Just documents. Random ones, just like... Now, remember, last time we saw a document signing backstage in TNA, it was Dixie Carter accidentally signing TNA away to Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan before 10-10-10. So, you know, everything comes together. Bruce Pritchard and his ugly, ugly shirts are a part of Aces and Eights, and Hulk Hogan just signed away the general managership of TNA to Bruce Pritchard. That's what I'm 90% sure just happened. But then someone from Aces and Eights showed up, attacked them, like, put hoods over their heads. And then we saw a replay of the attack, and it looked like they were kidnapped. And I thought to myself, if I'm watching on any other TV show where everything is happening in the same universe and everyone is aware of everything that is happening, like wrestling is, because the show is on backstage, Mike Tenay and Taz should be like, "No, we can't go on with the show. Hulk Hogan and Sting were just kidnapped by some ruthless biker thugs. What's going on? They were kidnapped." Like, if a main character gets kidnapped, you go after them. And this was just like some disturbing footage from earlier tonight of Hulk Hogan and Sting being kidnapped. Now, let's get to the gut check. Oh, okay. And this was the gut check segment with Evan Markalupla. And, Taz said yes, Bruce Pritchard said no. So Markalopoulos got to give his kick-out promo, and he was like, "I remember Al Snow in 1994, when you were trying to get into WCW, ECW, Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I was not even born yet, but I remember that." And it was kind of like, oh, okay, so your kick-out promo is... Now just, it's not the sob story anymore, it's the suck up to the judges. I think last week, What's-His-Face sucked up to Taz or something. And, you know, it was a fine promo for what it was. And he was like, "Yeah, I got my ass kicked last week, but I'm back standing here tonight." Okay. You got beat, yeah, but it's not like you got an Aces and Eight-Eight or something. Sam Shaw could have cut that promo. Sam Shaw should have cut that promo. More Sam Shaw, TNA. I like saying his name. So that was kind of strange. He was like, "I'm proud to get beat up, but I will learn from it every time." And it's like, that's not, you know, if this is real life, that's, you know, I don't walk into my boss's office and go, or walk into a job interview and go, "I may fail the first 8 times I try to do this project and waste thousands of company dollars, but you're damn sure I'm gonna learn from it." A, I don't job interview in that voice. As badass as that would be, man. Let's do this. But B, I also don't... I don't think that that's a wise way to sell yourself. You go, I learned from that experience. And put him in the ring with me right now again, and I guarantee you the result is different. You know, you say something like that. Not just, "I will learn from it. I will learn hard." But Al Snow ended up voting no, and this was like the first gut check of any of the gut checks since Joey Ryan. The Joey Ryan hasn't interfered in somehow, and we still got a backstage segment about him. But here's the thing with the Joey Ryan story. Maybe if you do that all in a month and you have the pay-per-view match shortly after their gut check, maybe on the, not the next pay-per-view, but the one after it, that's fine. And it works, but it's been so long. Yeah, Joey Ryan, 87% of a online poll that is always going to come out over 50% said that they liked you. Neat. Why am I watching you again? I just feel like TNA Creative has let this one go on for a little too long. So yeah, Markalopoulos was a no. He shook the judges' hands and walked away. And Bane from Aces and Eights was with Sting and Hogan, and he said that the boss is on his way. Magnus's Bound for Glory moments included 2009's Bound for Glory, which... was within walking distance of my house at the time. I was going to graduate school at the University of California in Irvine, and it was on campus. Like, I was, you know, I was a grad student slash a TA, and my job was in the parking structure that people were parking in for the show. Like, our offices were downstairs in the parking structure. That was cool. I had access to bathrooms no one else at that show had access to. Also, that show did not draw super well in the Southern California market. I don't know how TNA drew last time they were here earlier this year. I didn't get a chance to attend. But interestingly enough, I outgrew TNA Bound for Glory when I graduated in that same arena that Bound for Glory was in. Sting versus AJ Styles, I outgrew it. Kurt Angle versus Matt Morgan, I outgrew him. Me, Will Pruitt, I outgrew you, TNA. Suck it. Oh, okay, that's probably really biased on my part, but I'm going to keep saying it, because I'm proud, damn it. I got a master's degree. Yeah. So yeah, by the way, in theater, which is what I studied, the MFA is a terminal degree. I actually walked with PhD students, just to hype myself up a little more, because I know you listen to this for personal details about my life. And I give them to you, man, by the bucket full. But that it was a Full Metal Mayhem match for two separate tag team championships. It was like the IWGP tag titles that the Dudleys held and the TNA tag titles as well. And it was the Dudleys, the British Invasion, and some other teams. I don't remember. I could look it up. In fact, I'm curious. I'm gonna Wikipedia that ish right now on the old iPad. Yeah. Bound for Glory 09. Nope, I hit the ampersand instead of the 9. That's a bummer. Okay, Bound for Glory 2012. That's where you take me? Whatever. I'll just go back a couple. 2011. Okay. I'm failing at this, folks. 2010. Here we go. One more click. Boom. Tapped it. And 09, that match was the British Invasion versus the Dudleys versus Booker T and Scott Steiner versus Beer Money, Robert Roode and James Storm. And it was the British Invasion, Magnus and Doug Williams winning the TNA titles and the Dudleys winning the IWGP tag titles. So that happened. It was a fun match. I remember, I think I was sitting with, like, Awesome Kong's family, Tara's family, and Daniel's family in the seats. They hooked it up with free tickets. That was cool. Anyways, now that I've talked about my live event experience from 3 years ago, which I know you were curious about, Bane Sr., as Ryan Kessler has shown it, called him, basically the leader of Aces and Eights was shown. They, you know, Hogan and Sting had hoods on, they tore them off, Hulk Hogan is bald. But Bane, they showed the Bane-like figure, the more in charge one, and his voice was distorted, and he was wearing a backwards baseball cap and was turned around in his chair, so you could see no details but his ears. And he showed Joseph Park, like, on a table being electrocuted or something. Like, this looked like the Aces and Eights clubhouse slash sex dungeon. Like, it got weird at certain points when they were torturing Joseph Park and stuff, and it was weird. That was not a fun segment. But basically, this was, you know, Hogan being like, this has to end, we have to end this. And the Aces and Eights guy going, we're kind of upset that you locked us out, Hulk. I know we said we can get in, but we can't get in. We can't. So he laid out a challenge. And that challenge was two of the best of Aces and Eights, two of the, you know, the best Aces and Eights guys versus the two best TNA guys that Hulk wants to pick at Bound for Glory. If TNA wins, the Aces and Eights will go away. If Aces and Eights win, the TNA guy, or they get access to the Impact Zone again. So, and Hulk agreed to it and said, but give me Joe Park. And they were like, nope, we're keeping him until Bound for Glory. I wouldn't be shocked to see Abyss come out as one of the Aces and Eights guys at Bound for Glory. As a kind of, hey, this is happening. I wouldn't be shocked for the two TNA guys. Now, I have to acknowledge a rumor that Jason Powell is reporting on, in ProWrestling.net audio, that Garrett Bischoff may be the guy behind Aces and Eights. That's going around backstage in TNA. if that's true, I wouldn't be surprised to see the TNA guys end up being, like, Bully Ray and Garrett Bischoff. And Bully Ray and Garrett Bischoff, you know, do it basically being a finger poke of doom situation where they both join up with Aces and Eights that night and, you know, all chaos breaks loose. So that is a thing. I think Bully Ray will end up being one of the TNA guys, and he'll cost TNA the, you know, Team TNA the match. I'm surprised, actually, that this is only a 2-on-2 match. I would have expected a little bit more. I actually expected there to be, like, a 5-on-5 tag, and it would be your guys that aren't involved in a lot of Bound for Glory stuff. Like, throw in Rob Van Dam, who is also, you know, a candidate. Throw in, you know, a couple of maybe lower undercard guys and get that done. You know, I want to talk about a major disappointment of this show real quick. Where was the X Division? And, you know, where is Zema Ion? Where is Kenny King? Where is, you know, where is Sanjay Dutt? Where are all of these guys who are champions in TNA? You know, you have this big thing for the TV title. Where is the X Division? What are they doing with the X Division right now? And, yeah, I know, it's a classic internet mark complaint, but I don't even like that style of match all that much. I'm just really genuinely curious of where the hell the X Division has gone. What are they doing with them? Like, what's the plan for the X Division of Bound for Glory? Why aren't we seeing an X Division feud leading into Bound for Glory? Is it just going to be a multiple-man spot fest? Are we even going to have an X Division title match on the show? Are they just not going to build up to it again the way they didn't build up to Sanjay Dutt versus Zema Ion? Like, there was a real lack of the X Division guys on the show, and that, and I, you know, like I said, it sounds like a classic internet smart complaint. I'm not saying that because I feel like the work rate suffered or anything like that. I'm saying this because it's a title in TNA that is getting no emphasis and no love, and I think it's an issue. So, Hogan told, went back. Then we saw backstage, Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries walking. Jeff Hardy was in lime green face paint that made him look like one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which they were advertising all night. Nickelodeon is revamping the Turtles. I'm sorry. Computer animated Turtles. That's why it doesn't work. You gotta hand animate those things. Screw it. Just show the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles show. It was awesome. Can I get a what from the people who believe it was awesome? Thank you. Thank you. I'm assuming thousands, millions of you just what-whatted into your phones, computers, or other podcast listening devices. So, then we got a replay of the Aces and Eights video, and again, it's like, dude, they were kidnapped. Like, Taz and Mike Tenay were just like, man, that was some chilling footage. Did they kidnap a cameraman with them, or does the Aces and Eights employ their own cameraman, who TNA just happens to let hook into their satellite time? Interesting question. Gotta be asked, you know? Maybe it has to be asked because TNA doesn't pretend that cameras don't exist. So, it's kind of like, this is strange. Then we saw James Storm backstage with that really good promo that I talked about earlier. And just putting over King Mo, you know, as a great MMA fighter. He put over his match with Bobby Roode saying it's going to be brutal and they're glad they're finally going to get it under control. He's looking forward to the street fight. And he apologized for Roode's damn luck. Ryan Kester, trying to be a funny guy, thinks he's funny, said, I'm sorry for your condemned luck, which was kind of not what he said, Ryan. That's not what he said at all. Okay, it's kind of what he said, but it's just a different version of it. Then we got our main event. It was Bully Ray and Bobby Roode versus Austin Aries and Jeff Hardy, and this was some classic two baby faces that don't get along on the same teamwork, you know. Well, I'm going to do this to him. Well, I'm going to tag myself in, and I'm going to do this and hit my finishers and signatures, and I'm going to beat him. No, you're not. I'm going to tag in and hit my signatures and finishers and beat him. And this match finished with Roode getting Swanton bombed after Aries had hit the Brainbuster on him. Jeff Hardy got the blind tag and went up to the top and hit Roode with the Swanton. Good match. It was fun. I like where the Roode and Hardy story went tonight. Mostly just because or not Rude and Hardy, the Aries and Hardy story went tonight, mostly because they started telling a story. And it wasn't just them kind of confronting each other, but they started telling a really good story with that stuff. And yeah, it's not perfect, and you know, this match doesn't feel as hot as it should, but it was still a pretty good story that they told. So I fully support what they did here. Yeah, and then the end of the show was Aces and Eights dropping off Hogan and Sting, and they threatened to burn Park if they didn't behave. Burn him? Like, burn, like, actually set him on fire? Or is that biker gang for kill? I am not sure. Overall, a good episode. Like I said, so much of this was focused on Bound for Glory. It really started to make that show feel special, from Hogan's promo at the beginning to Aries and Hardy at the end. I didn't like a lot of the Aces and Eights sex dungeon stuff because it was taking place in a sex dungeon, which is just strange to me. But for the most part, I liked it. I thought, you know, you got the next step in Aries versus Hardy. You got the next step in Rude versus Storm. You got the next step even in the Aces and Eights. And, you know, those are the big three going into Bound for Glory. You got King Mo's kind of pseudo-celebrity involvement. You got the next step in the Knockouts division. You know, you got the next step in the tag team division, and now you start looking at that Bound for Glory card, and you start to go, okay, well, main event looks okay. You know, it'll be a good match. Rude versus Storm is going to be intense. You've got, you know, the triple threat tag match, which, you know, I'm starting to come around on. I said it wasn't going to be that good last week. I think it has a shot of being really good. Who knows, by next week I might be all the way up to off the charts good with how this match could end up. Yeah, and then the 2-on-2 with the Aces and Eights stuff that I think is going, that more than anything else on Bound for Glory, I believe is going to set the tone for the next year of TNA storyline. So you've got a lot of really great stuff happening. And for all of your TNA Bound for Glory needs, check out ProWrestling.net. That's your website, baby. ProWrestling.net. And more than just .net, check out the member site. This week, we had details on, you know, just in the .net weekly audio show that was put up yesterday. Jason Powell and Chris Shore, they talked exclusive details on Jeff Hardy's TNA contractual status. You're not going to get that anywhere else. They talked exclusive details on, you know, kind of that Garrett Bischoff rumor that I revealed to you. There is more about that, what TNA, you know, who believes it in the company, why they do and all of that, you know, an analysis of that on the ProWrestling.net member audio. Now, if you're thinking, man, I must be missing out on news. I feel downright misinformed, and you want to get that ish? Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Go to the membership link on the right-hand side of the page, and for as low as $5.50 a month, if you take that annual option, you can get access to ProWrestling.net membership, hours and hours of audio, an audio review of every major TV show, Raw, SmackDown, and Impact. If there's a pay-per-view, we audio review it as well. If they're, you know, on top of that, you get exclusive interviews from Chris Shore and Jason Powell. Just recently, Chris Shore sat down with Mike Bennett and Maria Kanellis. He sat down with Ring of Honor champion Kevin Steen. Exclusive interview with the Young Bucks from recently. Chris Shore has been lighting it up interview-wise, guys. It's crazy, the stuff that he's getting. And it's some really, really great listens from wrestlers being very candid. On top of that, you get Jason Powell's weekly Q&A audio, where you can ask him questions, and Jason will go to his sources and say, hey, can you tell me anything about this? And he's one of the most well-connected men in this industry. It's crazy. Plus, you know, you can ask him questions about wrestling history and a little bit of nonsense about football, too. Go Pack Go this weekend, by the way. On top of that, you get the, you know, .NET weekly audio show. You get the .NET countdown with myself and Jake Barnett counting down the top five best and bottom three worst moments of the week. Always a unique perspective on wrestling from us. And, you know, and you get ad-free access to ProWrestling.net. If it's already your news site of choice, you're not getting ads. You're seeing first-run news that we maybe wait 3 or 4 days before releasing to the general public. I mean, basically what I'm getting at is it's an excellent value for your money. $5.50 a month with that annual option. If you just want to try it out for a month, see if you like it. $7.50 for that month. Again, a great value. I said the other day, skip Chipotle once a month. Head on over to ProWrestling.net and check it out, because I do really believe that it's worth it. The best endorsement I can give the site is the one I always do. I paid for membership before I started writing for the site. I was a paying .net member because I believe that much in the site, and I'm not really the pay-for-my-news sites type of guy. I'm cheap. I like that extra Chipotle every month. But I felt like .net was worth it, and it is definitely worth it. So, head on over to ProWrestling.net, check it out, and, you know, thank you so much for listening this week. It really, you know, we appreciate the support on the member side. We also appreciate the support on the All Access side of things. Leave us some reviews in iTunes. Rate the podcast, man, and check out those apps as well. ProWrestling.net, we have, you know, we've got some awesome stuff going on. So thank you, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate the support on either side of things. And, you know, have a great weekend.